From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Two years ago, Baltimore City homicides soared to nearly one a day, the city's deadliest per capita on record. The statistic grabbed national attention and the focus of Amy Berbert, a student at UMBC. To her, the number represented the tragic anonymity of lives lost. In response, Berbert conceived her final senior project, Stains on the Sidewalk, for which she's documenting the 318 homicides of 2016. She returns on the one-year anniversary at the exact time and location where the violence occurred to make a photograph and then shares it on social media.
I've become so much more passionate about finding out why people do it, the reason behind. Like, why did they pick up a gun and feel that they needed to shoot this person? Because that's where the prevention happens.
It's on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. 2 years ago in the city of Baltimore, the number of homicides soared to 344, the city's deadliest per capita on record. The statistic grabbed national attention and the focus of a photography and graphic design major at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. To that student, Amy Berbert, the number represented the tragic anonymity of lives lost. In response, Berbert conceived her final senior project, Stains on the Sidewalk, for which she documents each city homicide. As she worked, it became clear to her that she needed to return on the one-year anniversary at the exact time and location where the violence occurred to make a photograph. So in January, she shifted her focus to the 318 homicides of 2016. The project is still in progress. Although Amy Berbert has now graduated, she's with us in the studio to talk about Stains on the Sidewalk and the experiences and emotions it has triggered for herself and for others. Amy Berbert, welcome to On the Record.
Hi, Sheila. It's great to be with you today.
What are you creating by documenting the 318 homicides committed in Baltimore City in 2016?
You know, it's partly a memorial for the people that were lost. These families have suffered something that most of us can't imagine. So it's a memorial for those people and for the city of Baltimore as well, because it's throughout the city this problem occurs. But it's more than that. You know, I want to grab people's attention and have them realize, I want them to see these photos and see that these are places that they drive by on their way to work. It's not secluded areas that they would never go into. There are two different Baltimores, but we shouldn't be separated. I think this problem affects everyone, and I want it to really bring attention. It's almost a little bit of a PSA to show people
public that, service announcement.
Yeah, to show that this is a problem that we need to all care about.
What put you in mind to even think of this project? What sparked the idea?
Well, after hearing the number 344 at the end of 2015, that was really concerning to me. I was a sophomore in college, and I hadn't really thought too much about the issue, even though it was right down the street from UMBC where I was going. And so I wanted to do something about it. I couldn't really handle just sitting by and not doing anything. So I started making some photography-based work around the issue of homicide in Baltimore. I did a couple of projects in some of my photography classes that spring, and one of those projects was some cinemagraphs, which is a combination of photo and video, where I went back to the homicide sites from some of the murders from 2015. And people seemed to really receive it well, and it was really moving for all the people that saw it. So I thought, what if I did a whole year? That would really show the magnitude of the issue. And by going back on the same exact day, I think that shows the dedication that I have to give to these people. You know, I have to plan my life around these people's death.
Tell me more about that, planning your life around these deaths.
Well, so I know it might sound petty, but like I can't go on vacation very often. There's a murder at least every other day. Overall, I can't go on vacation. I can't go to my cousin's wedding. I'm missing a lot of big events in this coming year. But to me, the people that I'm photographing, the place where they died, they will never get to go to another wedding. They'll never have another day off work. You know, their life has ended. So for me to do this for 1 year is really nothing compared to the fact that they will never have those opportunities again.
So it's a form of bearing witness to what's lost.
Yeah, it is.
What goes through your mind when you're on the scene?
Well, that has changed over time. I'm almost 6 months in now. So the first few, I think I was still just getting used to the idea of it. I had to really force myself to think about, like, okay, someone a year ago today, someone died here. And I still have to sometimes force myself to remember that because I've done 129 so far. So it almost becomes, it's become part of my daily routine, actually. And so to force myself to make sure that it is still about the individual and it's not becoming routine, I now sit back for a couple minutes as I prepare or decide where I want to take the photo. I sit and I think about where it could have happened, you know, which exact corner on this block it may have happened on.
Because you tend to have the information you
yes.
have is the block it occurred in, not necessarily the specific address.
Yes, because I go off of public records and all news articles, as well as the Baltimore Sun homicide map, which is where I get my information. But I also look at the city paper, Murder, Inc. They are all only the block of. Sometimes there's photos and sometimes there are people in the neighborhood that knew where it happened. So sometimes I know exactly where it happens, but usually I only have the block of to work with. To me, that doesn't take away too much from the meaning because, you know, maybe they were standing right where I was standing before they crossed the street and were shot. You know, maybe there was a witness standing where I'm standing. You know, who knows? Maybe they walk down that street every day. I didn't want to contact the police department to get the exact addresses. I'm not sure even if I would have been able to, but that to me seems like an invasion of privacy. And I want to be as respectful as I can to these victims and their families.
And you're not contacting the families?
No, sometimes I do meet people on the scene who knew the person. One time I was with a news station that was doing a story on me, and they got there before me, and they knocked on the door of the mother of the victim. She came outside and they did an interview with her, and that was really moving. But I know not everyone would react that way. So some people, it's the last thing they want to hear on the anniversary of their family member or friend's death is that there's a stranger outside photographing it. And, you know, I don't want to bring up bad memories if there's no reason to. I don't want to say that I will never contact anyone. I plan to make a book in the future of all of the photographs. So there's a possibility of contacting friends and family for that, but no plans yet.
have you run into friends or family who are marking the anniversary when you're there on the anniversary?
Yes, there have been a number of memorial sites. So oftentimes you see the balloons on the corner on a light post or something right after the shooting occurs. But I've come across that same thing, candlelight vigils and balloons and a big gathering of people on the year anniversary as well. And I think they must be timing it around the same exact time that it happened, like I am, because often there are still people there. So I've spoken with friends and cousins, and that's always moving. I remember one specific story. There were three actually homicides that day, but two of them were back to back. I had to drive 26 minutes to get from one to the other, and they were 30 minutes apart. So I could only spend a few minutes at the first one. And the first one had like probably 50 people. It's the biggest memorial that I've seen. That was a festive sort of celebration of life. Then the second one, it was like every single house on that block was boarded up. There was no one there to remember that victim. It was just such a stark difference. And it really reminded me of why I'm doing this. And that's to show that each person's life is equal in my eyes. You know, I think some people see a lot of the victims as criminals themselves. Maybe they were drug dealers, and maybe that's why they ended up in being killed. But to me, that shouldn't matter. I think the loss of human life is just that, a loss. And we should mourn that regardless. We should mourn the fact that they ended up in that situation, that the society we live in wasn't able to prevent that.
That's Amy Berbert here on The Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about her project Stains on the Sidewalk, which documents each of the homicides in Baltimore last year on the exact anniversary of the violence. Where can people see the photos?
So I have a Facebook page called Remembering the Stains on the Sidewalk, and I have an Instagram called Stains on the Sidewalk, where within 24 hours of taking the photo, I post each photo with the number it is in the sequence, the name, age, date, time, and location.
We will link to your Facebook page and to the Stains on the Sidewalk Facebook page and Instagram accounts. Do you have any idea who is following this project?
I know some people, some family members have contacted me because often the news gets information wrong. I just had a mother contact me to correct the last name because it was her son and she saw it and she had been following. The news had all reported it as his last name being Hill. And she was like, just wanted to let you know it's Hall. The news got it wrong. And then she said, thank you for, you know, doing this project. And so that was nice to hear. And she had liked the photo on Instagram. So it's good to know that people that are affected by it are liking the photos. I've gotten some backlash about the exact location issue, but that's about the only negative feedback. You know, I think a lot of just regular people in Baltimore are following because they see it every day and they know the issue and it affects them. And I think they also want to mourn these people.
Why did you choose to use social media instead of waiting until the documentation was complete?
Well, I think it's really important for this project. If I'm thinking about memorials, the fact that I take time out of my day for each of these victims to stand in remembrance of them, I'd like other people to be able to do the same. So when I post the photo and people see them, I think people are also able to pause for a moment in their day and remember that individual the same way that I'm doing.
Pushing back even further, why did you choose photography as a means of expression for this project?
You know, I studied photography and graphic design in college at UMBC, and it seemed to fit, you know. People, you can relate to words, you can sometimes relate to statistics. Those things are very important to deal with this problem. But when you see an image, especially an image that maybe you've been to that place before, you drive past it on your way to work, I think that does something different. And since I go back at the exact same time, then maybe it's, you know, maybe it's a beautiful sunset. Maybe it's like snowing, you know, who knows? And to be able to picture exactly that scene and think that there was someone standing right there and then they were killed, I think that does something different.
What is it doing to you?
Well, to be honest, I thought that taking the photos would be the hardest part. And sometimes it is, especially if it's I just did one of a 13-year-old that was shot. And that was hard. And especially there's a lot of young kids. Those are hard. But for me, the hardest part was probably recording them because I was listening to the news every day during 2016 and recording as people died, like real time. And that was hard. So I think that part for me was it showed me that you don't know who's next. I mean, a lot of the bullets don't have names attached. Many are targeted, but many aren't. So I think it's really been eye-opening for me to see that it's not, you don't have to be in the game to be a victim. A lot of these people are just struggling in these neighborhoods to get by, and they're raising kids in these neighborhoods. And they don't have the means to get out. And a lot of them end up being victims of this. More recently, right now I'm reading the book The Other Westmore. Mm-hmm. And for me, that has been very powerful to see, because the book takes you step by step of how this kid kind of throws away his life and ends up killing someone. And that book has really, in the past few weeks, brought my project back to home for me. Because now every time I go out, I'm like, I wonder if it was a similar situation. Like, I wonder if this could have been prevented. Because reading that book, you're like, this could have been prevented. And so it really makes me not only see the victims as individuals, but as humans.
Short break on the record, and we'll be back to hear what photographer Amy Berbert's plans are after she completes this year of documenting each of Baltimore's 2016 homicides on its exact anniversary. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay tuned.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass, speaking with photographer Amy Berbert about her project Stains on the Sidewalk, which documents each of the homicides in Baltimore last year on the exact anniversary of the violence. She's about midway through the project and has had many encounters on site along the way.
You mentioned a few minutes ago the two Baltimores, the mm-hmm. idea of a more affluent Baltimore where people don't feel that they're part of this problem, mm-hmm. and the neighborhoods mm-hmm. mostly of poverty where this is a much tougher problem. Do you feel you understand that better?
I definitely understand it better. I don't want to pretend that I fully understand it. There's so much to learn. But I think going into those neighborhoods, I only have to be there for like 5 or 10 minutes. These people have to live there every day. But going into these neighborhoods, like, I live in Mount Vernon, and to leave Mount Vernon and go into West Baltimore, East Baltimore, and be sometimes scared. I often go alone, and I'm often nervous because people know that I don't belong there. And I think that's sad. I mean, if I explain the project to them, often people are very supportive. But there's this idea that I don't belong, and I don't like that feeling, and I don't like that we're so separate. And so talking to other people that might be in the more affluent part of Baltimore about this project, they often seem to think that it's just criminals killing criminals and these people deserved it. And I mean, that's so sad for me to hear, because I think if you spend time in these neighborhoods, you see that these are just people. You know, they have wants and desires, and they're just trying to make it by. And I think they're really, at a basic level, we're all the same, you know, and to try to separate this group out from another group is sad, because I think if we are the ones with the resources to solve this problem, I think we have a responsibility to do that.
Does it feel different documenting a murder that's been solved, where the police think they have arrested the killer? Does that feel different? The majority have not been solved.
It's true. About a third are solved. And I don't know if it necessarily feels different as I'm photographing. The research is definitely different. The articles suddenly focus on the perpetrator and not the victim. And that's actually, I guess it does feel different in a way. I don't take the photos any differently. I'm trying to keep that pretty consistent with how I handle the actual photographs. But I have become, this was something I was not expecting from this project, I've become so much more passionate about finding out why people do it. Like, I mean, I want to know the reason behind, like why did they pick up a gun and feel that they needed to shoot this person? Because that's where the prevention happens. It's not making people feel sorry for the victims, because we do. When someone dies, we're sad about it. But the perpetrator's not. I mean, they did it on purpose, you know? So I think to know who, when I see the mugshot of who did it, when I'm looking up at the articles, I mean, I feel so awful for the victim and the family of the victim, of course. But I also see the person that did it. And I wonder what their childhood was like and what got them into that situation.
So as you said, you're not quite halfway through documenting mm-hmm. each of these murders on the anniversary of the violence. What is your plan? You mentioned a book.
I would like to make a book. I would also like to exhibit in galleries, both in Baltimore and outside of Baltimore. I think everyone in Baltimore knows about the issue. I think some people are a little bit jaded by it. So I think this would maybe be a good way to rekindle the fire inside people to fight this issue. But there's a lot of people outside of Baltimore that are still close by. I exhibited the cinemagraphs that I made in 2016 in Rockville in Montgomery County, and people were kind of blown away by it. They had no idea the issue because Rockville is a much different demographic than the inner city of Baltimore. So I would like to also exhibit it outside the city to show other people this city in our state is struggling. And like, here's a visual representation of that. I think a book is a good way to make it more intimate for people. You can pause and look at one photo at a time, because it was one person. It's 318 murders, but they were killed one person at a time.
So what do you hope people will take from it?
Partially, I want people to become aware of the problem and the extent of the issue. I want people to become aware of the fact that it's not just criminals killing criminals, and a lot of the victims were regular people. So there's an awareness aspect. I also want to inspire people to try to do something about it. I think that this all begins with our youth. I think that if we want to change something, then we need to invest in supporting our youth and not letting them roam the streets in the middle of the night. So I would really encourage people to get involved with youth programs in Baltimore City. That's my personal goal, but I mean, I just want people to engage in a dialogue on a more general scope. I would like people to just at least start talking about it.
That's Amy Burbert here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about her project Stains on the Sidewalk, which documents each of the homicides in Baltimore last year on the exact anniversary of the violence. Your commitment to this, the way you have invited it to take over your life, literally every day, an appointment to commemorate somebody, reminds me a bit of a religious person who engages in monastic prayer to pray for those who to try to be in solidarity with people who are suffering in some way. You are looking at the end of what you have committed to do on December 31st. Mm-hmm. Do you hope somebody else will pick it up? Is this a project that needs to be continued?
I hadn't thought of someone else picking it up. I had someone once ask me if people were doing this in other cities. There have been other people that go back to homicide locations, but I'm the only one that's gone back on the exact day and time to the place where it happened a year later. So I think that it could be interesting if someone continued it. I have thought about what it will be like on December 31st. It's like in the middle of the night at like 1 a.m. or something is the last one, and it's on East North Avenue. And I'm just going to be standing there. Like, that's it. 24 hours later or less than that, there was someone killed January 1st, 2017, and they won't be part of my project. And that's sad for me. I don't ever want to say I'm building a relationship with these people, because that's not fair to their families who had real relationships with them. But I almost feel like I'm building a relationship with the city. I drive all over the city at all times of day. And for that to come to an immediate halt is sad. I now know what work I want to do for the rest of my life.
Which is?
I really want to work with youth and inmates, and I want to get to know the people that are at risk of committing the crimes or have already committed the crimes. You know, I want to prevent that. I want to make artwork surrounding that, but I also want to do personal work in those sectors as well. So I think it would be good if we could continue this idea, even if it's not this exact project. I think as a community, we need to continue discussing this issue.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Photographer Amy Berbert's project, Stains on the Sidewalk, documents each of last year's homicides in Baltimore. She photographs the location of the violence on the precise anniversary and posts each photo within 24 hours. We have links to her Instagram and Facebook accounts at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. I'm Sheila Kast. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Kast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.